Hi, my name is Kirk Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. In a previous podcast, I spent some time talking about the historically high valuations of the U.S. stock market. While no one knows the future, it might be a good time to start looking at ways to hedge against market disruptions or downsides. Today, we're talking to Sean O'Hara of Pacer ETFs. Pacer pioneered some intriguing strategies to help investors hedge against stock market downturns or just to find more value in today's high valuation environment. I've known Sean for over a decade now and have followed his research on exchange-traded funds. Sean's been in the financial industry since 1985, and he's been with Pacer Financial since 2007, leading their national wholesaling team. He's also made numerous appearances in the financial TV media, including CNBC and Fox Business. I think this discussion today will give you some good food for thought as you look at your personal investment portfolio. All right, Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I just want to kind of jump right into it. So, you know, many folks listening, this could be their first introduction to Pacer ETFs. I was just hoping maybe you could give us a little bit of background on Pacer.
Sure. Well, you know, Pacer ETFs is a relatively new ETF issuer. I say relatively new because the ETF business itself is sort of relatively new if you think about it. We started about 4.5 years ago, and we've already been fortunate enough to sort of climb up the AUM rankings. We've gathered about $5.75 billion in AUM in the last 4.5 years, mostly by focusing on building ETFs that are somewhat different than what traditional ETF issuers might build. We build ETFs that are based on strategy, that's how we like to describe it. We try to build products that solve or ETFs that solve client needs, whether that's risk mitigation on the downside or whether they're trying to get a smarter exposure to value or whether they're seeking to produce alpha in terms of excess return above and beyond a benchmark.
Okay, great. And how did you kind of get your start with them?
Well, I mean, I've been in this business, financial services business, since 1985. I spent most of my career on the distribution side, in other words, helping financial advisors understand different investment products. I worked for a company called Planco for a while, I say a while, more than 20-something years. And we were the primary distribution outlet for the Hartford for their variable annuities, their mutual funds, and their 401ks. I left there and joined forces with one of the original owners of Planco. Planco got acquired by the Hartford, and he left for a while. And so he and I got back together. His name is Joe Thompson. And we decided that initially what we wanted to do was sort of focus on the distribution side. But a series of sort of fortunate events led us to becoming both a manufacturer, if you will, or the issuer of ETFs and the distribution and marketing force behind it. So that's how we sort of got started in this venture, if you will, is after a long career in financial services, we saw the ETF business as ripe with opportunity for somebody who wanted to build ETFs that were differentiated in the marketplace and that would allow us to sort of rely on our what we think our core strengths is, which is working with financial advisors and trying to help them position smart strategies and build portfolios that really cater to the specific needs of their individual clients.
Okay, awesome. So yeah, I mean, you've been involved in the ETF space for quite a long time. You know, we were chatting, we probably run across paths more than a decade ago. You know, as ETFs are really taking off. So before we really get into the strategies of Pacer, I was hoping maybe you could take a couple questions on just the ETF space in general. So, you know, right now, I come across all kinds of articles, or you have pundits that are talking about how the ETF structure is going to blow up the market at some point and be the next source for the, you know, market dislocation. How would you answer those pundits?
I would say to those pundits that that they're probably mislabeling what could potentially be an issue down the road. The idea, I guess the general premise for those is that with more and more money going into passive strategies, when investors decide to, retreat to the sidelines, if we have a bear market scenario, that will create a logjam. I actually believe that the ETF business will provide more liquidity for those investors because of the way ETFs are structured, number one. Number two is that the second thing I would point out is that when and if that happens, and it's not a matter of if it will happen, we will go through another bear market cycle here in the United States because this is a part of being an equity investor. There's bull markets and there's bear markets, and they sort of trade places every 4 to 5 years. We've been very fortunate in this bull market run that we're in that it's been north of 11 years straight. But one day we will have another bear market, and it's not necessarily the vehicle, whether it's mutual funds or individual owners of stocks or ETFs or separately managed accounts, that will cause stock prices to fall. It will be investor behavior in general that will do that. You have to keep in mind that the mutual fund business here in the United States is north of $20 trillion, and the ETF business here in the United States is somewhere between $4 and $5 trillion. So on a relative dollar-for-dollar basis of all investable dollars, the ETF business is still relatively small. It is primarily dominated by big players who just simply wrap broad-based indexes and charge very low fees, all that cheap beta, if you will. But those names that are in those big broad-based indexes, and so therefore inside those ETFs, are also the names that all the mutual fund holders own because they do their best to try to track or slightly beat their benchmark. But ETFs in general, I think, will provide liquidity in the market for equities. Fixed income might be a little bit more different or a different challenge, but I think ETFs will provide liquidity in the market, and they won't be the cause of a big market decline or a big market disruption. I think it's just general investor behavior that causes that.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I agree totally. It's, if anything, it's because so many ETFs are passive tracking vehicles, and so many people now are doing passive that, yeah, if it's, there's a lot of companies that are, their stock price is probably much higher than it should be just because they're part of an index. So, I think that's probably where it is.
I'm not sure I would, I don't want to disagree with the host, but I'm not sure I would say that either. With $20 trillion in mutual funds, if I'm a large cap U.S. fund manager on an active basis and my benchmark's the S&P 500, I'm going to own a lot of the same names. So it's the general situation that's causing valuations currently to be high. And that is that if you're an investor today who traditionally would have, let's say, an asset allocation model or an asset allocation approach to how you run your portfolio for retirement, you're always going to have an allocation to equities. And you traditionally would have an allocation to fixed income and other stuff. The fact that there are very low yields across the board, I think, is forcing more and more investors to seek out equities as an alternative to those low interest rates that bonds would provide. And that's probably more than anything what's driving up the valuations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely would agree with that. There's a lot of things that are doing that. But I think I was kind of saying, like, it's not the ETF. People are pointing at ETFs, but really they should be pointing at kind of the passive, more and more money's going to passive instead of active management. So, I think that's where it'll probably shake out, like you kind of mentioned. Do you find that when you talk to investors or other even financial planners, that there are other kind of large misconceptions on ETFs? I still find that there's quite a bit, even in the investment, advisor field, that they don't really understand them.
Yeah, Kirk, we don't spend any time sort of pointing directly at the end investor. In other words, we're not like a Vanguard, we're not trying to, to put out products or ETFs that, that people will buy online. We are big believers in the value of financial advice. Working with somebody like you, a professional investor who can thoughtfully put together portfolios for clients, we think is in the long run the best course of action. and the best way to invest. So we spend all our time talking to financial advisors, and there are some misconceptions. The biggest misconception probably that we run into is around liquidity and volume. You know, ETFs are open-ended investments, which means that the ETF issuer can create as many new shares as they need to based on demand on a daily basis, and they can redeem as many shares out of the market as they need to on a daily basis based on investor demand. Most people look at the volume or the number of shares traded on an ETF and try to look to that as an indication of whether or not there's liquidity or not. And we spend a lot of time talking about the creation and redemption process that ETFs use to issue new shares or to take shares out of the market. And that process really relies upon the underlying liquidity of the holdings of the ETFs and the fact that we can make as many new shares as we want on a daily basis and redeem as many shares as we want on a daily basis means that as long as the underlying holdings in the ETF are liquid, then you should be able to execute trades or buy and sell, to put it in layman's terms, to buy and sell using limit orders, even on ETFs that might be newer or smaller or might not have a lot of daily volume.
Yeah, I would agree 100% on that. That's probably the biggest thing is I've heard advisors say that they don't use a certain ETF because there's, you know, 1,000 shares traded a day. I like that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Find what you like.
In most cases, if it's an ETF that's got, you know, very liquid underlying holdings in its basket or in its index, you could buy 100,000 shares as long as you know what you're doing and as long as you're using limit orders and involving a professional. You could certainly do that without any problem.
Sure. Okay, great. I want to kind of jump into the pace of ETFs then. So, you know, like you'd already mentioned, we're at least 10 years away from the last true bear market, and we have some historically high valuations. So, you know, one of the most intriguing ideas to me of pace ETFs is your trend pilot ETFs. Can you kind of just give us an overview of the philosophy behind those holdings?
Sure. The trend pilot ETFs are a series of ETFs with various different exposures from the S&P 500 to the NASDAQ 100 to a mid-cap index or an international index or now even in fixed income with high yield, where the whole idea is to try to determine using a moving average when the best time it is to be invested fully in that index and then when the best time would be to move to the sidelines into treasury bills with the eye on providing some downside risk mitigation. So it's been a long time since we've seen the stock market fall quite a bit. And when that happens, it generally challenges investors' faith in the long-term investment thesis. And, you know, the buy and hold and just ride it out, you know, over time, if you really have enough discipline to do that, it's probably not a bad idea. But Trend Pilot is geared towards essentially using the 200-day simple moving average as an entry and an exit point to determine whether we're going to be invested in stocks or whether we're going to be invested in treasury bills. And the whole idea behind it is to not ride the bear market all the way to the bottom.
Okay, great. And you kind of mentioned, could you just repeat that again, the asset classes you're kind of doing this with your ETFs?
Sure. There's a version of the Trend Pilot that tracks the S&P 500 using the 200-day moving average to determine exposure, whether we own the S&P or T-bills. There's one that uses the NASDAQ 100. There's a Trend Pilot that uses a mid-cap index from S&P called the Mid-Cap 400. There's an international version of Trend Pilot using an S&P international index, and there's a European version. And then we just recently introduced the very first fixed income ETF that Pacer has issued, which is it uses a high yield index from S&P and a 7 to 10 year treasury bond. And it sort of switches back and forth your exposure based on a risk, a moving average risk signal.
Okay. All right. And so it's not one of those, it doesn't sound like it's, you know, once you cross the 200 day, you just jump out. It's sort of a phased approach, right?
Yeah, so we look at the index relative to its moving average. When it's above its moving average for at least 5 consecutive days, we're going to own that equity index in the exact way that, you know, S&P, for example, says we're supposed to own the S&P 500. When the index falls below its moving average for five straight days, the portfolio starts to take half the money and go to treasury bills. And then that sort of waits. We like to talk about it like a traffic light, green, yellow, and red. There's actually a neat little client video that you could watch that sort of explains this. And there's also a client brochure on why trend following. But the yellow piece is when we're 50-50, once the index falls below its moving average for five straight days, half the money will go to T-bills. And then from there, we'll either do one of two things. Either we'll go back into the market at some point, and that would be if the index went back above its moving average for five consecutive days, or if while we're in that 50-50 mode, the moving average starts to turn negative, the remainder of the portfolio will go to treasury bills and will stay there until the index goes back above its 200-day simple moving average. And I'm pretty sure you've seen this, but if you'll get that client brochure that I referenced about why trend following, you can see that if you just simply use the 200-day moving average as an exit point, you can mitigate a lot of the downside risk that investors face when we go into these bear market cycles.
Okay. So how do you see most advisors and investors using your ETFs? Is it kind of a core holding or a complement? Is it just something that maybe they hedge with other, the S&P 500 holding, they'll put some towards the Pacer ETF that matches the same thing?
Yeah, so the easiest way to think about it would be is if you own a large cap U.S. active mutual fund, or you own an ETF that tracks, let's just say, the S&P 500. The way financial advisors are using the trend pilots is they're taking a portion of that exposure, what the investor owns, and putting it into the trend pilot so that in an up market, it acts just like everything else that you already own. But in a down market, it acts decidedly different. And so using it in combination with those other traditional long-only strategies is a way to build a portfolio that will provide far more risk management or risk mitigation, if you will, on the downside. And that's traditionally how FAs are using us with their client portfolios. They'll take, about a third of their exposure. So if the client owns IVV or SPY, maybe they'll take a third of that exposure and buy trend pilot. If they own the Qs, they'll take a third of that exposure and they'll put it into the trend pilot version that tracks the NASDAQ 100. And the whole idea is that now that piece of the portfolio, if the market continues, say we go to a 20-year bull market, right, we'll continue to rise with the market. But if we eventually get into this bear market cycle, the trend pilot part of that portfolio will go to treasury bills, and it'll help us manage and mitigate some of the extreme downside risk that investors face when we go through these bear market cycles.
Okay, perfect. And as I think most investors probably expect, the upside of those funds have kind of trailed the index a little bit, because you're going to jump to bonds and then you wait till you get 5 days above the 200-day moving average on the way up. But you still have to imagine that your Sharpe ratio has got to be far superior to the index in general, especially if we do have a downturn. It's just, so many folks today forget about how important it is to look at return per unit of risk. And it just seems like people have forgotten that, but I would imagine your Sharpe ratio for these have got to be pretty good.
Well, when we start to use the terms like Sharpe ratio, the average investor thinks we're talking about cheddar cheese. So it's much easier to just explain it in like a real context. So like, let's take 2018 and 2019 kind of consecutively. So if you use the large cap trend pilot, PTLC, which tracks the S&P 500, you would have been fully invested in the S&P 500 the first 10 months of 2018, and you would have been 100% in treasury bills for November and December of 2018. So the S&P 500 finished down about 5% for the year in 2018, and the trend pilot version of the S&P 500 finished up about 2%. That's a pretty good result for somebody who's concerned about, am I going to lose in a down market? That wasn't a bear market scenario. That was essentially just a pretty nasty correction. But we like to say it was a pretty good fire drill for us to kind of set our portfolios in place to make sure that they do what we want. Mm-hmm. Now, because we used the moving average, you remember that in 2019, at the beginning of the year in January was like a historic month in the market. It shot straight up. And so we would have been in treasury bills during that period of time, and we would have missed a little bit of that upside. And instead of finishing up, I think the S&P was up around 28 or 29% for the year for 2019, we would have been up about 18 or 19% for the year. But in the total over that two-year period, you would have had pretty close to the same return, but you wouldn't have had all of that angst that every investor faced at the end of the year. You know, I was talking to a financial advisor the other day, and he said that, you know, the favorite thing that he does every year at Christmas time is he watches It's a Wonderful Life on Christmas Eve with his family. And he said in 2018, it was a really bad Christmas Eve because he had several clients calling him on Christmas Eve while he was watching It's a Wonderful Life, worrying about this the stock market being down like what it was on Christmas Eve. Trendpilot helps to deal with some of that if you use it in combination with the traditional long-only investment.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, that's a great way to explain it. We always love it when you can plug in it, you know, It's a Wonderful Life or George Bailey reference. So, another intriguing idea at Pacer is the cash cow strategy. I think that would probably appeal to a lot of people, especially you know, advisors or retirees. Can you kind of give us a little theory behind those ETFs?
Sure. The idea behind the cash cows is that rather than own a whole index all the time, like like the bulk of the ETF industry would, what we do is we take those broad indexes and we screen for something that we think is a very solid indicator of a high quality company that that can pay and grow its dividends, and that is free cash flow yield. So we free cash flow yield, just to make sure we define everything, is a free cash flow yield in a technical sense is the free cash flow a company generates divided by its enterprise value, and enterprise value is market cap plus debt. And so essentially it's a measurement of how much you're paying for the amount of free cash flow you're getting. And so the cash cows ETFs take these broad-based indexes and screen for the 100 names in any index, quarterly for U.S. strategies and semi-annually for international and global strategies, the 100 names with the highest free cash flow yield. And so in today's environment where everybody's talking about the market trading at 19 times earnings, and isn't that a little bit rich, you can take an index like the Russell 1000, which would be a broad-based U.S. large cap index, and screen for the 100 names with the highest free cash flow yield. And those 100 names on average trade at about 12 times earnings. So you're paying far less for the amount of earnings that you're receiving than you would by investing in the broad market. It's really a value strategy over time. And value strategies are designed to make sure that you're not paying too much for the unit of profit or the unit of cash flow that you're receiving. So for folks who are a little worried about this stock market but don't necessarily want to call the top yet, we talked about Trendpilot and what it can do. What cash cows can do on the other side is can allow you to invest in high quality companies that generate a lot of free cash flow, that pay dividends and grow their dividends, and do so at a much lower PE ratio, price to earnings ratio, than the broad market. 12 times earnings today versus 19 for the broad market.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it just seems like, you know, this past bull market has been so directed towards growth stocks that, you know, everything's cyclical in the market. So at some point, value is definitely going to rear its head again. And it seems like the cash cow strategy would be a good way to go.
Well, it's interesting to me. I think last year, everybody had a great year in the market. The stock market did great. But I think about 70% or more of the return in the market last year was PE expansion. In other words, stocks getting more expensive relative to their earnings. And so that, you know, sooner or later, that's going to have to come to an end. We have to pay a fair price for the amount of earnings that we're getting. And so that's why we think, you know, positioning a little bit of money in the cash cows today and having a little bit more fundamentally based approach to what you're paying for stocks using free cash flow might make sense today. You can still participate in this market. You can still get attractive returns. You can get paid attractive dividends, but you can be sure that you know that you're not paying too much for, relative to the broad market, that is, paying too much for the unit of earnings or the unit of free cash flow that you're getting from each company you own.
Absolutely. Well, so Sean, really appreciate your time here. Is there a good place for people that are listening that want to check out, you know, some of your writings, some of your information? Do you have, you know, Twitter or Facebook or anything like that where they can get some more information?
Well, the first thing I'd say is they should call somebody like you. But if they didn't want to call somebody like you, they want to do a little work on their own before they called somebody like you, called a financial professional. We do have a website. It's PacerETFs.com. A lot of the stuff that we've talked about is on that website, including the client video, including the client brochure that explains trend following. There's also a corresponding client video and a client brochure that talks about why we like free cash flow yield so much as well. So that would be where I would point them.
Okay, great. Well, again, thanks so much for your time. We'll be talking soon.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Okay, take care. Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast, along with other articles and videos, at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kirk Kinder. Kirk Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.